Welcome to the RC Roundtable Podcast, where we discuss the latest RC hobby news, events, model reviews, and a whole lot more. And huzzah! It's the RC Roundtable, bringing you episode 236 on this fine afternoon, evening, wherever it is, whatever time it is, wherever you're listening to at. And I can't speak English. But anyways, hello everybody. Welcome to RC Roundtable. My name is Fitz Walker. To my, whatever that side is, left, side, right, yeah. Is Terry Dunn.
Howdy.
Greetings. And below us both is Lee Ray.
Greetings, Earthlings.
And we make up the, greetings, Earth creatures. And we make up the trifecta that is the RC Roundtable. And we bring you goodness of discussions relating to mostly RC related subjects, but sometimes we veer off way into the left field because that's the way we roll, right?
Like right now, we're veering off.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sounds like you're setting the bar a little too high. We're right out of the gate.
On the feeder.
On that happy note, how you doing, guys? How's it going? How's your week? And
are you really asking us that question?
Don't us all speak at once.
Yeah. Why don't you just the big lever with the brakes? Here it is.
You're the one had the brakes. Sure. I threw it into your lap,
you,
and Fitz. You guys
I don't know
are just
what Terry's problem. That was a valid question, so yes. I'm doing pretty well. Fitz, thanks for asking. You're such a nice friend.
That's good to hear. I'm glad to hear it, Lee. I like some grouchy pants over there.
He is.
I've got a sanding bar. I'll just punish
look
myself.
At his name. It's oil and water. He's clearly like yin and yang.
Yeah, barely. Somebody fell off the wrong side of the bed this morning.
Yeah, I've been good at starting fights today with other people.
Yeah, I want to get into that one. If this is the first time you listen to the show, we're not usually like this, mostly.
No, we're always like this. Always.
All right, where do we want to start? We got a bunch of stuff. Let's get rolling.
Roll them at us, Fitz.
Yeah, you got the list.
Well, since we started with a dour note, let's continue with this dour note. We had gotten news over the past week that old Stalwart Dumas model products is shutting down. They've got about a month left, if I recall correctly, as of this recording. So you can order stuff from them, whatever's in stock, for about another month, and then they're going to be gone. Which is interesting because they're not selling out. They're just closing up shop because reasons? I really never heard why. Our old buddy Tony Accurso was really sending us some really great pictures and videos from his factory tour the past week or two or whatever he was there on his Facebook page. And it's just really interesting to see their operations. It's, you know, very much a mom and pop kind of place, it looked like. Not a whole lot of employees. Dumas has been around a very long time, mostly famous, of course, for their boats, RC boats of all sorts. But they dabbled in, I guess you can call it rubber-powered RC, airplanes.
Yeah. Electric and RC.
Were they RC?
A lot of Pat Tridle stuff is through Dumas.
Oh, okay. I thought he did somewhere else. I couldn't remember. Okay, yes. Stuff, obviously, you could make RC very easily, but some larger scale free flight and RC-able kits and various stuff. But, you know, if you're in a boat, you definitely knew Dumas. They made all kinds of stuff. And then they went into a little bit in airplane stuff, with laser cut stuff. I have a few Dumas kits of various types. I got a Dumas boat one of these years I'll build, and several of the airplanes. So it'll be sad to see them go. I don't know, that's going to leave a big bit of a hole in the industry for their products.
Yeah, I think a giant one.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else who's doing the stuff that they do with the wooden boats?
No, not to their level. I mean, you have Zipkit that has some wooden boats, Lee's boat.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yeah. But some of the scale, they had a lot of, I was looking at some of their inventory, they had a lot of stuff that they made. I have a Star 45 that's Dumas that's partially built. So a lot of sailboats, tugboats, scale boats of various types.
Boats.
We got big boats, little boats, tug boats, chicken fried boats. And so that's mainly what they're known for. But it'd be and a lot of hardware. Of course, they had a lot of fittings and things like that for their boats and whatnot. So I don't, not sure if everybody's aware of that, but just thought we'd give them a shout out to say, you know, so long and thanks for all the stuff. over the years.
I got to say, before I got my puddle jumper, the little swamp buggy was popular.
Yeah.
049 airboat.
Yeah.
All right. That one's always been intriguing to me because I wonder how they hinge the rudder. It appears as if it's held up by sorcery.
Yeah, it does look like a kind of a single point, fragile point there. Yeah.
A nail. one nail.
Duct tape and bubble gum.
All right. Certainly somebody out there listening has built a little swamp buggy, and they can tell us how the rudder is hinged on there. So, yeah, send us an email. Let us know. Contact at rcroundtable.com.
And one of my, someone I know has one of those little boats, it's electric power, but it's basically the little swamp buggy, 049 powered one. And that is a funky thing, the control on the water, because it's sort of, you don't really control it so much as give it sort of suggestions and see where it goes. It's very skittish and stuff. So it's fun. It's a very fun thing to drive around, but it's not a precisely driving machine.
Imagine if it had the 049 on it with no throttle control.
Oh, yeah. He'd hang it up for dear life for 2 minutes.
Yeah. So I feel like I've seen one before. Maybe it was a video, but it would had enough power to not quite plane. So it was just kind of plowing. I know I've seen some electric powered ones of the swamp buggy and others that plane very easily. So it might just be that one might have been an issue of balance or something else.
Yeah, see, Liz pulled up their website. Some neat stuff. They have a lot of planes. I was actually looking through their inventory, and they have a lot of plane models. I was surprised just how many models they started spitting out. Yeah. All kinds of neat stuff.
Yeah, again, I think a lot of their stuff is designed by Pat Tridle, who's a very accomplished free flighter, and he does a lot of smaller electrics as well. Maybe even some bigger electrics, I don't know. But he builds, or designs and builds some very lightweight airplanes.
Yeah, look at that. The huge spruce goose. Was it H1 or something?
Does it give the span?
30.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty cool. Teeny tiny.
Well, it's not tiny, but the tiny spruce goose, I guess. Balsa goose.
Put 8 O10 engines on that sucker. So you can get them all running at once. Bulldog. One thing I would like to get, I don't think I have, I have to double check, is the Rapide, the de Havilland.
The de Havilland Dragon Rapide, yeah. So ugly, it's pretty.
Yeah, that would be a neat one to build.
Yeah.
I'll have to make sure I find one before they become unobtainium.
Yeah, don't there wait around.
There you go, Fitz.
Yeah, 335, DL-335. Push me, pull me. Supposedly the fastest German aircraft, other than their jets. That looks pretty interesting. That river boat or whatever that is, that looks pretty interesting.
I mean, the Chriscraft boats is where basically where I, you know, guess heard Dumas the first time.
Those are real popular.
Kits.
Now, have you guys ever built a wooden hulled boat?
Never.
No.
Yeah, me neither.
No. I've held one of them in my hands and admired it.
Yeah. I have not. That's an interesting point.
Yeah, lots of planking, at least with some of them. That would be,
yeah, it'd be maybe, an interesting experience.
Yeah, the one day before I die to try that.
Just to have the experience of doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got some.
And they had some sailboats.
Yeah, sailboats. Oh, they had a couple submarines, too. Yeah, what happened there?
No. Oh, they had one of these ice boats.
There it is.
Terry.
Oh.
There you go, Terry. That's what you need. Yeah, ice boat. Ice sailboat, whatever you want to call those things.
Now, if I recall, you guys went, was it Perry that you went to with Kirk? And he bought a big tugboat?
He got the Mr. Darby. Yeah, it was a Dumas Mr. Darby. Probably one of the biggest boats they made.
Do you see it here? Because these are the big ones.
I don't see it. Must be something
I
no longer
it was
made.
This bad boy.
All right, but that was a big fiberglass hull, like the size of a hot tub, right?
Yeah, I think it was huge.
Okay.
It eventually got running. It changed hands after Kirk, but the other guy who got it actually got it running. I saw it on the water. The Noah's Ark.
Did you see? But you should put the, what do they call it, for the cup? races, they had the new foils that go in the water.
Oh, hydrofoils.
Hydrofoils.
On Noah's Ark.
Noah's Ark on a hydrofoil.
Uh-huh. That's one of those kits.
Lightning would come out of the sky and smite you.
I was wondering if more of this particular boat was sold to churches than actually put in our water for RC.
It'd be a fun little thing to have.
Yeah. Yeah, neat little river boats, speed boats.
All right.
Are we going to click on every page?
No.
God. Almost every page. Well, I guess we're just reminiscing. It'd be interesting to hear anybody else who's got any experience with Dumas and maybe send us a note or two or a picture just to reminisce. But did it say anything on the website about their closing date? I couldn't remember exactly if they said anything.
I don't think
Sorry, Lee. I meant to ask you before you closed it.
But the big picture here is if you've been waiting for the right moment to pull the trigger on a boat or one of their airplanes, it's the right moment.
Yeah. The best time is now.
Yes.
The second best time was yesterday.
All right, but that is sad.
The message here is we have made the difficult decision to close our business. We will be accepting orders through April 15th. Orders will be processed first come, first served. Our last day of business will be May 15th.
All right.
So April 15th, tax day?
Yeah. All right. Well, that is sad news, but, you know, stuff happens.
Yeah, it's interesting. They didn't try to sell out. They just decided they're going to
Or maybe they did. We don't know.
Well, that's true. Maybe they tried. Nobody wanted to buy it, so.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's go on to something maybe a little happier. Who do we want to go?
Spin that wheel, Fitz.
I've got a... let me just go to... So, Lee and I went to a swap meet this weekend.
And what did you get?
We got some stuff and things.
All right. Toys. We got misfit toys.
Who wants to go swap first? Meet?
Where?
This is the Scobie Swap Meet in Houston, Texas, the Scobie Field.
Katy-ish, Texas.
Is it Katy-ish? Yeah, Katy-ish, Sugarland, North Sugarland-ish. They usually have a nice parking lot swap meet. Usually you have two or three of them throughout the year, so you'll always try to go out to them. And as usual, found a few interesting things.
You go first.
Right. Want to go first? So I got a little box of stuff. I didn't buy any planes. But I did get some interesting odds and ends. I'm gonna stand up for a second. Speaking of free flight, I did get a B-25 Gillows kit.
Yes, you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Lee subsidized the purchase a little bit, but I still got a really good deal.
What's your ambition for that?
What's that?
What's your ambition for that kit?
RC.
Yeah. What are your intentions with my airplane?
Your airplane?
Well, the joke went right over. Go ahead. Yeah, continue.
I didn't get it.
Okay.
You're going to have to be more obvious with your jokes because my brain is too literal, probably.
They're just too highbrow for this crowd.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I loaded up on, guy had a bunch of Dave Brown engine mounts.
Okay.
For a couple bucks each. So I grabbed a whole bunch of, I like getting the smaller ones. I don't even, do you know if Dave Brown's in business anymore? I don't think they are, right? I need to look that up. But it's always good to grab, like this is an 049 mount, some 10 size, 15 size. I like for the smaller engines. It was cheap and I always grab, you never know when I might need one for a project or something. So I always just grab a bunch of them. Let's see what else. Speaking of that, guy had this little guy. Did you know McCoy made a little 049 size diesel engine? I had no idea they made one. So I just it was not expensive, pretty cheap. So I just got it for the novelty, but I would like to one day see if it runs. Some wheels, Robart wheels, because you never know when Robart, if they ever get back in business or not. So I grabbed some wheels for steel. But the most interesting thing is this, actually why I have this bucket, pull this stuff out of here. So this guy had...
Your filing system is the same as mine.
Yeah, just threw it on the table. This bucket of stuff, and I started looking at it. It's like, oh, neat. It's actually one of those modular tool things. It has a little a sander. Mm-hmm. It has a couple of different sanders, a little hand sander and a disc sander and a drill and a, get out of here, adorable little mini table saw.
Nice.
That's real small. It's all controlled by, let me put just that stuff in here so it doesn't fall on the floor.
It looks like something you get from Micromark.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. It's like a Micromark, but a different, has a different name on it, but I wonder if it came out of the same factory. It's got a power supply that's a variable voltage or variable speed, so to speak, and switch, and they just plug into these things. And so it was basically just like those Micromark ones, but for a small fraction of the price of a Micromark setup. Hmm. And so I thought, that's really neat for building stuff. I thought it'd be really, really cool.
Right.
So that was my loot from the swap meet. So, which is nice. I didn't need to get any more planes, even though there's a couple of, one or two planes that were tempting, but nah, the tools were cooler for me. I don't think there was anything else.
So you weren't a seller?
No, I didn't have a chance. I was, our old pal Richard was in town visiting with me, so I didn't really feel the gumption to go grab stuff and sell. I need to, maybe the next one. Oh, we stopped by Randy's hobby shop, and I picked up this guy that they had sitting there. I don't know if it was consignment or what. It's an old MRC all foam De Havilland DH80 puss moth. What the hell a puss moth is? I got it because it looks like, at first it looked like it was just a rubber band powered thing with a little gearbox, but then I looked on the side of the box, and lo and behold, I don't know if you can see it, they show a couple of servos in there.
Oh, interesting.
So it was designed to be RC-able. I thought, well, that would make a nice little
RC-able.
RC-able, yeah. See the servos?
RC-able.
Yeah, there. They even show, I can't tell right there, a little Cox 010, 020 motor engine as well. So it is pretty neat. It's actually a pretty neat model. It's all like a Depron, molded Depron kit. So it might make a really nice indoor flying plane or something like that, or a very calm day flyer. And it was pretty cheap, so I grabbed it out of the hobby shop. So I think that's it for me. And anything things for the swap meet? I'm thinking if I missed anything.
Is that Puss Moth a new product?
No, I'm sure it's pretty old. It probably dates back to the 80s or 90s. I don't know if there's a copyright on it. I didn't even take a look at the manual. I'm not seeing anything, but no, you can kind of get an idea by looking at the equipment they suggest.
Oh, right.
The fact that they're talking Cox, it's got a place at 90s at the latest.
Install your Heathkit escapement.
Yeah. I remember seeing that in some of like old Gills kits I used to build, and they literally show escapements and really crude electronics. I thought there was a servo one here.
All right. Well, it was not a serious question. You don't have to dig into it too much now.
Yeah, they show like an old Sanwa servo in the picture. Sanwa Airtronics. So, yeah, this is definitely 20th century technology.
So I didn't know Randy's Hobbies did either consignment or used items.
Yeah, they do. In fact, when you walk up to them, there's a big sign on the door that says, we buy used airplanes or looking for used airplanes and that kind of stuff. So there was some stuff hanging from the ceiling. There was some model kits in there that apparently looked like they were consignment.
Okay.
So, yeah, apparently, I don't know if there's new, and maybe Lee, you go there more often than I do. It's more your side of town than mine, but it seems like
it's usually at the front.
Yeah.
I've grabbed a couple of things.
Yeah.
I assume we'll be seeing Randy at the Nats this summer with the Pylon crew.
That's right. He's a big Pylon guy.
If we're there when they do the Pylon racing, yeah. And oh, he's your competition too, Fitz. with the Rich's Brew
fuel. Rich's Brew? Yeah, it's yeah. We're a friendly competition. We really don't have much of an overlap. I'm more to Cox special fuels, and he's more generic stuff.
I told Fitz he should dye his fuel blue.
Oh, there you go.
And then tell everybody his new name.
Heisenberg?
Heisenberg.
Was that you damn right?
I was hoping you'd get the joke.
Yes.
All right. Are you done, Fitz?
Yeah, I'm done. Lee, you take away.
All right. Mine's pretty simple. I got two things. I'm going to share this screen here. There we go. So this is number one. Anybody guess? Anybody? Class?
There's
anybody?
No guessing. It's right there. It's Cessna 337.
Good. Well, I mean.
For those listening, Lee just put up a three view of a Cessna 337 asking us, what is this plane?
This is the JR Models Skymaster. They don't. Do they even put 337 on there? Or they just say Skymaster. And, yeah.
It's, and it may depending, 337, 336, depending if it has three tracks or not.
Oh.
These are fixed.
So does that make it a 336?
I believe so.
Well, that's a Skymaster. So right here, back behind me, you know, I'm not going to zoom in, is my JR Models P38. So fiberglass fuselage, balsa. Well, my P38, I think it's a foam core wing, balsa sheeted. And this is fiberglass fuselage and booms, built up wing and tail. It's a, you know, all in a box. Our buddy Richard Ng brought it down from Dallas, and I picked that up from him. And that will go next to my other 337 that I'm working on. We'll talk about later. That's Hobby Lobby? What was the manufacturer? Do you remember, Fitz?
JP model, wasn't it? Or JR model, something like that? I think Hobby Lobby imported them, but they didn't make them. They came out of Europe.
The foamy one's not JR.
Oh, the foamy one. That is some, I have no idea where it came from originally. I think Hobby Lobby sold them, yes.
Right.
Yeah, Hobby Lobby sold them. But
yeah.
Okay, so I got that one. And then I have a reprinted, which will be my third 3D printed 337 sitting in a box. So I'll have three of these suckers hopefully running someday. All right. So I got that. So thank you, Richard. I appreciate that. And then
don't go to the drawing yet.
I will.
Is there a key there? Does it give specs for the motors or batteries?
Nothing. I'm not kidding. Well, if you look, it's funny because I was talking to Terry after I got it, and I sent him this page that's basically the only instruction you get. There's no other manual that comes with it. It's basically, see this, build this.
Wow, that's really...
It's a geared brush
motor. I was just looking at gear brush motor.
Yeah.
There's the batteries, the akku, our batteries.
Yeah, accumulator.
I mean, yeah. There's just a weird bag angle of parts, and it's like, good luck finding where to put these.
Good fun, have luck.
Yeah, I assume that's for NICADs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
And that,
I'm glad I found a guy who built one. He put an article up, maybe 5 years ago.
No, that's
four or 5 years ago with his build. So, in really good photos and detail. So, I think I've got what I need to push on.
Don't know if I'm a fan of that rudder and elevator setup.
Yeah, look at that. So
not at all. Not at all. In fact, I don't know if you ever saw my P38, but this is how they wanted you to run the elevator for my
P38. Those turns, twists and turns to get the cable.
I took that right out. I don't have a rear motor, so I could do it, but I actually installed an elevator servo in the rear end of the fuselage cockpit pod in my P38, and I just have a stiff carbon fiber rod go straight back to the elevator.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you want to do that here.
Yeah, you got a propeller in a way.
Oh, I could make this a fan, maybe. Who knows? I'll play with it. It's wonky.
So for those listening, the drawing shows the rudder and the elevator servo. It looks like in the top wing or somewhere in the fuselage, ahead of the spar, with flex cables making all sorts of pretzel-type loops.
Super flex cable.
Through the boom.
Yeah. Spaghetti flex cable.
Yeah.
Wet spaghetti. Wow. Wet noodle. I mean,
really, that kind of flex should have been, push-pull.
Oh, the flex is in two dimensions, too, or three dimensions. Look at the front on the right, the front view.
Yeah, right here?
No, on the right. Bottom right.
Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, the servos are inverted.
Yeah, they're inverted, so you got to flex up and around. Wow.
Huh. Yeah.
Well, I don't think that's what this guy did.
So, no, no.
Well, magic. And I don't know if you noticed this too, but each rudder has its own line. Too.
Well, that's fine. I guess he used two micro servos. So it looks like this was probably a brushed geared setup.
Well, no, I mean, it's not. I mean, it's one servo running each rudder.
Oh, sorry. I was jumping to the motors. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm looking at the geared setup. I wonder if this predates brushless or.
Well, these are brush motors, brush geared motors.
Yeah. So that's probably why you're talking old technology, old.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, it'll be interesting to see how you modernize it and get it up flying.
It's not on my priority list right now, but yeah, I've got it.
I understand.
Someday soon.
That's cool, though. It's
all right. So that's number one. And then here's number two.
Ooh.
And I'm all excited. I'm all happy.
Where's the banana for scale?
The banana would be the size of the tail cone, the bottom tail cone.
So tell us what we got.
This is the FMS Avanti S 90 mil. A very popular kit. I've always enjoyed seeing it flying, and I've flown the 70 millimeter yellow and white Avanti. I guess that was the first one that came out, and I enjoyed it. Flew it a couple of times at Camp AMA, and when this one came out, I was like, man, that is the kind that I'd like to fly. I saw a couple of guys flying with SCOBY. This one has the thrust vectoring as well, which is why you have these extra pieces. And it's kind of a long story, so I'll wrap it up real quick. I was walking the streets with Fitz at SCOBY and looking at all the stuff for sale. This caught my eye. I went over and looked at it, and then I admired it and touched it and said, you'll be mine. And I walked away. And then Fitz and I were walking back. I said, hey, Fitz, come look at this for me. And he gave me a thumbs up saying, yeah, it looked like he was in good shape. And I was like, I can't do it. He was asking $450. So I was like, I wasn't planning on buying that, and I missed my chance at best to get one for $300. And I was walking to the car, putting the 337 away, and it's like, you know what? I'm going to go make an offer. So I went back, I made an offer, the guy accepted, and then after talking to him, turns out he's a member of my club, and just 2 weeks prior, he and I were flying our Tiger Cats together, right next to each other with Fitz filming, and we had no idea who we were. And then once we laughed for a bit, he's like, oh, now we know who each other is.
Look at each other?
I guess not. I had my eyes on my airplane. I was like admiring him from afar.
Like, wearing a disguise?
Anyway, again, we could ramble on that for a long time. I was just very grateful that he accepted my offer. He did say he has to meet up with me to give me the gear doors. He forgot to, I guess he took them off to do something. And in any case, I'm very happy. I already benched it and did some taxiing and got everything programmed. So I'm looking forward to taking out my new Avanti S to the field.
You benched it? What does that mean?
You know, set it up.
Oh, okay.
Bench configured, bench tested.
Plugged everything in, yeah. Checked all the servos, programmed the flaps, programmed the thrust vectoring. Now, the only thing it's missing, it doesn't bother me too much, but with the thrust vectoring, some people say if you're planning to do some maneuvers and slow maneuvers, you want a gyro. So this doesn't have the FMS version or the Spectrum Safe /AS3X. It's just a standard 10-channel. So I'll fly it standard for a while, see how I feel, and if I really enjoy it and when I go a little further, I'll consider a gyro.
All right. It'll be interesting to see how that flies, because I have the 80 mil version of the Avanti, the yellow and white one, and it's one of my favorite sport jets to fly.
So they make an 80 and a 90, and how many different sizes are there?
So the yellow and white one is an 80, wasn't a 70?
I think they have a 70 too.
Oh, so I wonder which one I did fly. It didn't seem very big. I have a 50, by the way. I forgot to mention that. I have that Hobby Zone 50 mil. Fun. It's got a little stabilizer, hand launch. It's a blast, but that's kind of why I wanted the larger Avanti 90. It gets rave reviews online. Go to YouTube. You'll see these guys hovering them and flying them and having a ball. I want to as well. So we'll see how it goes.
We've been making fun of all the timber variants. We should have been dogging on this guy.
Avanti variants? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're all over. They have turbine versions, too.
And are they all FMS? Or
No, else? I think.
I think.
Free Wing makes.
Oh, who makes versions. This one?
I think this is a Free Wing, as a matter of fact. Oh no, it's FMS. It's FMS. On it. Yeah.
Now so, here's something for you, Fitz.
Yeah.
This is the one thing that I thought, well, I found interesting or odd with this kit. Everything else looks fine. It is FMS, but the sticker on the fuselage is MIA. Both on this side and the other side, it doesn't have the Avanti S sticker that goes right there behind the cockpit.
Maybe it was an optional thing.
Maybe.
You think they replaced the fuselage at some point?
Maybe.
Or it's not an Avanti S.
It's an Avanti Q. But I don't know. It wasn't Avanti there. T. But every time I see someone unboxing them, it's on there. So maybe he just didn't like the sticker.
Yours
didn't come with a sticker.
Should you see yours is unique? It doesn't
say it. It is unique, yeah.
All right, so you guys straighten me out here. So this is a sport jet, right? It's not based on any full-scale thing.
No.
But multiple companies have similar designs with the same name?
Yeah, well, like I said, I have the Hobby Zone 50mm Avanti.
Yeah, so you got Hobby Zone, you got Free Wing, you got FMS. Probably one more.
Somebody help me understand that. It seems like each of the designs...
Have you ever seen Avanti? Do you have Avanti at your field?
I'm sure I have, but it never clicked to me that multiple companies were producing the same sport jet.
So I don't know how the copyright works on that.
That's the part.
That is the same shape, just different colors.
And if they're using the same name,
I don't know. That's a good question. Let's say I'll pay a license to somebody.
Oh, I'm sure those Chinese companies are paying all sorts of licenses. So again, I'll enlist the help of all the listeners.
But all seriously, that is an interesting question. Where did the Avanti originally come from? What was the first Avanti?
Well, looking at Horizon Hobby, they sell the FMS. And so there is a 70. You're saying you have an 80?
I have an 80. The Free Wing is 80.
Okay.
And you got the FMS 90.
Yeah.
So well, I'll tell you what. 95.
I've enjoyed always seeing when people have this and they're flying in a club, are there flaps down, low, slow passes? And it just sounds good too. It's just nice and slow. And I've actually seen one guy just coming in real slow, flaps down, and then right when he gets to the mid runway, he drops the gear. And it stops. Oh, and this thing has a reverse thrust too.
Oh, what is it? Oh.
Yeah. So, what battery?
6,000.
And how much flight time do you expect to get out of that?
3 to 4 minutes.
Okay. Depends on how much thrust vectoring you do.
Correct.
The best 3 to 4 minutes of your day.
Yeah, could be.
Oh, well, I think so. It has been on my wish list. When I was at Best and I saw it for sale, I was like, yep, I'm going to get it. Missed my opportunity. And I'm glad this gentleman made a deal. So,
yeah.
All right. Good time. Happy for you.
Me too. Me too. And she's right here.
I expect a video during the maiden.
Okay. Re-maiden.
Yeah.
Probably. New ownership. Yeah. New ownership maiden.
That's a good question. So it has flown before.
Yeah, and what's nice, this gentleman, David, his name is David. Again, we flew our Tiger Cats together. He and I both have the Free Wing T-33s, which is right there in the corner of the room. And then he, unfortunately, lost his HSD. Gosh, I think he may have said it was a 120mm. Maybe you were there, Fitz. Yeah, I think you were with us, Fitz, when he lost his T-33 at the end of the runway. I think he LVC'd coming in right over the trees. Do you remember?
Don't remember that. No, I don't.
Yeah, they had to make the walk of shame out there. And he had gotten that for a steal from somebody else. And it was in great shape because I remember admiring it before he flew. But he and I have a very similar, aircraft that we like. And I hear he's got an arsenal. He's got a hangar full of aircraft. What do you call it? A gaggle of aircraft. A plethora of EDFs.
Yeah, he's our people.
Would you say he has a plethora?
A plethora of EDFs. I will. I need to befriend him enough to invite myself to his house and take a look at all of them. Sounds like he's a connoisseur. All right. Well, I'm done. Did you do any swap meets, Terry?
Nope. I did not. I don't know of any going on around here until next month. So, sorry.
So, I got a, not quite a go back, go forward, back, back, forward. So, I got a new acquisition.
Okay.
Not swap wheat related. I just actually went out with my hard-earned money and bought it.
I'll allow it.
I teased it before with the pitcher.
Yeah, the box.
Yes.
Oh, right.
Yeah, baby. I say, old chaps. Finally got myself the Free Wing, speaking of Free Wing, 64 millimeter English Electric Lightning.
Okay.
The plane's so, so goofy, it's great.
You sent us some photos of mysterious boxes on your doorstep a few days ago. Is that?
Yeah. Okay. This is what it was. Yeah. The finally got one. I've been wanting one and been sort of procrastinating. Then finally pulled the trigger. I haven't done anything with it.
Top bottom engine exhaust?
Yeah, this is a twin. It's got two engines in it. Well, the original one does. The model just has one EDF, 64 mil. No, very fast interceptor, basically equivalent to our 104 Starfighter, roughly.
Was it really that fast?
It probably wasn't quite as fast, but I think it was for similar role and similar performance.
Huh, all right. Cool.
Yeah. So I always thought it was a really interesting aircraft, really, especially the wings. Of course, the wings are very unusual, the way they're shaped. Mm-hmm. And it was great that they finally made an EDF version. Unfortunately, it's a little small. It's going to be basically relegated to hand launching kind of stuff. It has wheels, but they look terrible. So let's just do hand launching with it. But still, I got one. I've always wanted one. Happy puppy.
All right. So what size battery does that use?
I don't know.
Okay. I know we talked about it when this was released, but I don't know.
2200, I think.
Oh, 4S 2200. 4 cell. All right.
Something like that. I'd have to look. It doesn't say on the box.
Yeah.
A battery I'm sure I have in the box somewhere.
Yeah. Just be careful of those British electrical systems.
Yeah. They have the reverse positive ground system on the
6 volts. You know how it is.
6 volts, yeah.
Well, congratulations to you.
Oh, thanks.
You haven't put it together?
No, I just opened the box briefly to kind of gawk at it. Did I even open the box? No, I haven't even opened the box. That's right, I was looking at something else. Yeah, it's still sealed. I just haven't had a chance to really touch it.
I now question your level of excitement.
Oh, I'm very excited. It's just I've just been a whirlwind the past few days of stuff and things, so I'll get to it.
Okay.
I have to get to it.
You know you're committed when you take the top off and you put it in the bottom. It's like that is this. Phase one.
All right. What's next? Do we want to talk to 3View or do we want to leave that for later?
No, let's do it. Let's knock it out.
Let's go for the 3View, something we haven't done in quite a while.
I will give Terry the screen because I think he's the only one who's got the 3View in nearby. Unless Terry fits that. You have yours?
Yeah, it's right here.
Where's yours, Lee?
Mine's in the workshop.
You were warned.
I know it was warned. I can still talk about it. It didn't say I had to have it.
All right, fine.
Are you ashamed of it?
No.
All right, what we're talking about, we're going to do a segment we call 3View, and the basic premise is that all three of us have built the same thing from a kit, and we give our respective views on this thing. And the thing we built this time is not the regular flight box, not the OK flight box, but the ultimate flight box from balsakits.com. So I've already got mine here. I've talked about it a little bit in the past, and I was just waiting on these jokers to catch up. And Fitz is going to prove that he's caught up. And I guess we'll just have to take Lee's word for it, that he's caught up.
Well, I'm just showing there. That's what we're talking about, balsakiss.com, the ultimate flight box.
Uh-huh.
All right. So now that you've seen it online, Terry will show you his.
You show me yours, I'll show you mine, something like that.
That's exactly it. All right.
I'm ready. I'm waiting for you, Lee.
I'm holding it over here. Here we go. Look, see, I'm holding it.
Mine even has batteries in it.
Oh, it does? Oh, yeah, look at that. Okay.
Mine's right where it needs to be in the workshop.
Right. So you would assume, since this is a segment we've done before, that we have some sort of structure to it and a plan. We do not. We're just going to wing it. So,
Fitz, well, you wrote an article, so start with that.
I did. It's in, is it the March issue? The one that's in my mailbox a few days ago.
Yeah, it's just March, this issue.
Yeah, of Model Aviation. Just a quick blurb about it. So it is an all light ply box. And what is the thickness of this? I think it's 1/8 inch light ply. So this isn't a super heavy deal. And it's made primarily for electric flyers. So it's got a removable organizer here for batteries. And by the way, it fits 4S2200s perfectly. So Fitz, you can get 9 batteries for your Lightning to go to the field.
Yeah, I even put bigger batteries. I have a 4S3200 fit in that little spot.
Oh, okay. So there
you go. Yeah, so bigger stuff. Did you build this little, I'm not sure exactly what this is for, this little separator organizer?
Into the battery box.
It fits in the side here.
Side, if you wanted a divider for that.
Yeah.
But I didn't.
I built it, but I'm not sure if I'll keep it or not.
I use it as a secret compartment in the battery box.
So we can do that?
Yeah, it raises the battery box so it's easy to get out, and then you can put stuff.
Oh, that's a good idea. Okay.
Thank you. See, I'm adding to the 3 view.
Thank you. And then there's a drawer down here. That's your secret drawer right there. Uh-huh. And
yeah, there's a drawer.
It's secret. It's right there.
And the thing that I thought was clever is on this side, a little pocket, if you will, that's designed for your cigarettes or your lipo checkers.
Yeah. So, a lipo checker. That'd be a good thing to put in there. I was wondering what to put in there. I wasn't quite sure.
And then, now Fitz, you were asking about an extra part, but I think this here is optional. It can either be a tool holder with these holes and things cut out of it, or it can be just a flat panel and make it a shelf.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Before, hold on. I'm going to bring your screen up. I want to bring it back up. This is what I think is very unique or creative about this. This is one of my pros. Pull the box back on the screen, Terry. Okay. Aim it so we see the little holder right there. Okay. So you might say to yourself, well, what if I drop a screw and it falls into one of those little holes there where the screwdriver is? Okay. It's like, oh no, it fell in that little compartment. Now tilt it down and show the little rabbit, I mean the mouth hole. There's a little hole.
Yeah, down.
Yeah, there's a little hole they made. Right there, exactly.
Yeah.
So that you can shake things around and come out of that compartment.
I didn't really realize that. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
That is brilliant.
That's clever, yeah. I wonder if he didn't have that originally and exactly. Dropped something, just like, damn it.
He just turned around, read
design change.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I will quickly go over my process for this. Oh, look, there's a ladybug on mine. Can you see it?
Either is that good luck?
It might be a Japanese beetle.
I know. Is it red or orange? If it's orange, throw it away.
Yeah. It's probably devouring my foundation. So anyway, I built mine per the manual. I used, it recommends Titebond 2 glue specifically, which is what I used. But before I built anything, I stained the wood. And I used a water-based blue stain. And I purposely avoided the areas where I knew glue would go, because apparently the stain goes in and fills some of the wood grain, which is exactly how glue is supposed to work, too. So if you fill it with stain, the glue's not going to do its job. So anyway, I stained it, and then once I had all the parts stained, I assembled it per the manual. And I'll let you guys comment on this once it's your turn, but everything fit perfectly. I did not have to tweak anything at all. The parts just fit right into place. And I did sand everything beforehand, like the face of all the parts. I think I did with 220 grit just to smooth it out a little. And then on the edges, I hit them with 150 to get the burn marks off, and then went back over with 220 after that. But like I said, everything fit together exactly as it should. I didn't have any issues with it. The glue seems to be holding even with the stain. And once I had it assembled, I put a coat of water-based polyurethane over the whole thing. And I think it's going to be pretty handy. Right now, my current plan is to use this in my summer flying because it fits a transmitter right here. And then, like we mentioned before, several batteries here, and then tools and other stuff. So I think it's a good size for the stuff I'll need for a few hours of flying out at my field. So I'm going to give it a go. I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about it.
Fitz? Lee's talking about it on mute, apparently. Oh.
I was saying is let Fitz go next since he's got the kit in his possession.
Okay, well, I'll have to say is, like Terry, I did use Type Bond 2 as well, my first time using it. But unlike Terry, I didn't do any staining, I didn't do any sanding, didn't do any prep work.
Oh, you didn't sand anything?
I didn't do anything, I didn't do nothing. Huh. The only thing I did do, obviously, is, I don't know if you can tell, is I did paint it.
This okay, is I not couldn't tell if it color. Was, is it white?
It's like a antique white. It's off-white. So that's okay. Probably why it's not so obvious that I painted it. But actually, before I assembled it, I took all the pieces outside and laid them out and spray painted them with, I think it was Rust-Oleum paint. I just had some paint already in the shop. That 2X.
The primer Rust-Oleum and paint in one.
Yeah, yeah. And it says good for wood and stuff. So I just painted just the color I happen to have, which is sort of this off-white antique color. And I just barely had enough paint in the can to do it all. and then I just glued it together with Type Bond, and so far it seems to be holding. I did see one joint I think I didn't put enough glue on. It's my kind of fault, but it's minor. So I then just kind of followed instructions. The Type Bond was actually pretty nice. It cures relatively quickly. I think half hour was enough to let it cure enough that I can start other pieces. So I would glue a small subassembly and weigh it down, clamp it, or whatever I needed to do. Wait half an hour and do something else. So I can build this and do something else at the same time. And so it went relatively quickly. Actually, I was surprised. And I don't know what else. Now, I did have a little nitpick. I don't know if we want to get into that or not.
Yeah, a little pros and cons.
You have the floor.
So, okay. So, but the only issue I had was the fitting of, show it up. So, we've got the handle, which is laminated up several pieces that has to fit in this round piece that's cut. And that fits, you can see here, into the side walls. So, you've got several pieces that come together. Assembled the handle, it did not fit very well into these circular pieces here on the inset. I actually had to sand and take a razor blade to trim out. You can see this sort of a not a faceted, but sort of a stepped cut. And I had to kind of trim those a little more with some file and an X-Acto knife, and then sort of tap them into with a hammer, tap it all together and to glue it. So I don't know, maybe my wood shrank or something in transit, or maybe the paint did it. I'm not sure. It just didn't fit all that well. Everything else fit just fine. Just for some reason, the handle pieces into the circular reinforcement, just doublers, didn't quite fit very well. But I was able to install it. I had to bend these back a little bit. It's for you sort of the handles last, and so. I had to bend these outer pieces out a little bit to get the handle in there. And I think, but other than that, that was the only thing I can remember that I had a little bit of an issue with. But other than that, it went really well. I think it's pretty well engineered for the most part.
Yeah. So your handle was bigger than the hole meant to accept the handle?
Yeah. So you've got these slots, right, that there's stepped slots.
Yeah.
And so it seems like the wood for the handle was a little bit too big, and I'm not sure if in cord or something. It just didn't fit very well without me trimming it.
When you did you make the handle before you tried to insert it, or was it all in one deal?
It was, well, no, I didn't glue the handle together. I just kind of held it together and tried to insert the pieces. So there's plenty of room for the handle to self-align in there. It wasn't glued. But it just didn't fit. It was like the laser cut was this too small, or the kerf was not set right, or something. I'm not sure.
Interesting.
I don't know if you guys had that problem or not, but maybe it's just me.
For mine, it fit fine. I laminated the handle together first, and then after it was dry, I inserted it. But if anything, it would have given more trouble.
Yeah, really?
Maybe the difference is, I mean, the relative humidity up here is probably in the 20s, 20%.
Oh, okay. So maybe since I'm in super humid Houston, the wood may have expanded a little bit.
Maybe, but I would think you would see similar issues on every tab and slot.
Yeah, this is the only spot that I had that issue, and it was on both sides.
So, what about you, Lee?
I did exactly what you did, Terry, is I built the handle first. I used the end, those round end pieces, to hold them straight, and then I used painter's tape to just tighten it. So I made the handle first, and then I went in and inserted the handle into the two ends there, and then put the discs back, and that seemed to go okay. And so, the funny thing that I did differently than you guys is that I CA'd this sucker. I got me a half bottle of Starbond and went at it and kicker. And I was like, I'm not going to wait around for 20, 30 minutes while this joint dries and I'll work on maybe that joint. I was like, let's do this thing. So I will say my problem, I guess, was that I went out and bought a can of water-based polyurethane. I got the gloss because I was thinking, yeah, okay, maybe I'll put a nice shine to this. So my first step was to sand every piece of plywood in the box front and back. And I did a really good job with that. I mean, that took some time. So I got things real smooth. But the moment I started brushing on the water-based polyurethane, it lifted the wood. I don't remember. It's like a sanding sealer sometimes. And you do that with balsa, it makes it real rough. So you have to go down and sand it again. But everything just started getting really rough. And I was like, I don't have time for this. I took all the pieces out. So unless I just did a huge roller on each sheet and then sanded and then did it again, I was just taking too much time. So currently my kit is not painted. It is still dry. But boy, it goes together really fast when you use CA and kicker. And I will say, you know, just make sure you test fit the pieces. But overall, like both of you guys said, the pieces fit very well. And I'm going to guess with fits, I'm just going to say, I think because of how maybe Terry and I assembled our handles, that would be the situation. I mean, maybe that's the one problem I had. Now, I will say on the con side, the handle is like my weakest link. I would have preferred a dowel. I would have preferred a hole that just pushed the dowel right through and then find a way to cap the ends. I'm not a big fan of how that laminate handle goes on. That's just me. I think I prefer the round.
Comfort or aesthetics? What's your beef?
Comfort. Okay. Probably. And simplicity. It was, you know, because you just said you had to laminate those pieces. And here I am with, because I didn't want to use CA, because the moment you shift that wrong, it's going to work. So I'm using tight bond and, you know, I got it all nice and neat, but it's just, again, I think if I were to get another one, I'd just drill a hole right through and put a dowel in. Love the build, love the slot. The little drawer is great. I did like the little mouse hole to let screw pieces come out. Thought that was brilliant. The little battery container that you can take out. Yeah, it is all a very well light box.
I got an idea, Lee. Maybe put some of the pipe insulation over the handle. You know that.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, you could do. Yeah, you could wrap it like tennis racket wrap or something like that, and do something. But again, if it were me and someone bought one, I'd say before you put that handle together, we'll see if you got a spare broomstick in your garage. Dremel out that hole and throw it right through there.
Yeah. Well, I get the reason they did it for this, because that is the same material that the whole rest of the thing is. From a manufacturing standpoint, it makes sense.
So here is something that I think we should point out. You talked about it right at the beginning, Terry. There is this extra piece, number 10. I remember. Okay. Nothing in the manual talks about how you have an option for this number 10 piece. You just find it and you go, oh crap, where did I forget to put number 10? So you can either have the little screw container 10 part, or you can have a flat piece that you just put screws and stuff in or something like that. And they didn't mention it in the manual. So number one, that needs to be fixed. Number two, I think you should say you either can do this handle because they had the leftover wood, you know, it just made sense to just keep it in there, or go buy yourself a, you know, what is that? 12 inch, you know, half inch dowel, whatever, and tried something different. And then Fitz walks away. Yeah. He doesn't like my comments. I get no respect.
We had his attention for a minute. That's really all we can ask.
I guess he really didn't like the dowel handle idea. Oh, he went to go get the foam.
He's pulling insulation off of his pipes there.
Everything's warming up now in Texas. Okay, that was it. Other than that, it's neat. It's a simple little box. If you've never had a flight box, it's one you should highly consider.
Yeah. So we will put a link up to balsakits.com, and I think Fitz is unmuted now.
Yeah.
So it is, it's hard to say what the price is. The website shows a normal price of $79, right now down to $59, which is 25% off. So if you would like to get a flight box of your own, that's where you get them from. And worth noting, made in the USA.
Yeah, America. Mm-hmm. So my biggest thing is, what am I going to put in it? Let's decide how to populate it with stuff. Tools and stuff, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Random.
Yeah.
Get a... And to remember, I don't usually have a toolbox, so the other thing is remembering to take it with me when I go to the flying field.
Right.
Well, let me ask this question. When you first got started, did you have a flight box? Like a flight box like this?
No. I would do is occasionally take with me a basic box I got from a little container box, a go box kind of thing, depending on what I was doing. But no, I didn't really have a flight box.
My dad had a flight box. I still have my dad's. And then I don't think he gave me another one, but when I was on my own, I built my own flight box. Then I got a second flight box. But since I got into electric, I'm sure we all can talk about our favorite like toolbox or something, but I had this black toolbox that I've used for, 10, 15 years. That is my mainstay. I mean, that goes with me everywhere. And I have all the screws that I need for some airplanes that are sitting there in pill bottles or something. So it's just, that's my box. I may not use this a lot. In fact, I'm actually thinking this might be a great giveaway for us at mine or, some event I go to, maybe take it to Seth and can, do that just to give someone that ability to have a starter box. But it is nice, so I definitely would recommend it.
Yeah, I should have mentioned, I did have a starter box way back in the day when I used to fly only glow stuff. So I had one that had a starter motor and a control panel and a battery and that kind of stuff. But
yeah, it's worth noting. That's a big design difference in this one, since it's designed for electric.
And by the way, I still have my flight box, the one I made myself. It's a little red one, doesn't matter. I see that.
Oh, that's cool. But,
Look at that. It's an option. What do you think?
That's nice. That's actually a good idea. It's a good thing I thought of it.
I mean, I don't have a problem with that, but it gets brittle. That kind of a phone gets brittle. So I would probably look into getting that tennis racket wrap.
Well, it's like $3 for 8 feet of it.
Yeah, if that much. Yeah, it's super cheap.
But yeah, tennis racket, the whatever you call that, wrap.
Room handle. I mean.
you say it gets brittle. I've used it on my mounts in the workshop for like, years and it hasn't gotten brittle.
Have you met the chemicals in my workshop?
<That's true. laughs> Yeah, good point.
You see what happens. I should be wearing a hazmat suit. All right. So did we do everything you want to touch on? Everything, Terry, that you wanted to touch on?
I think so. We this is fun to do. We should pick another item to do a 3-view for the future.
Like a Sky Hunter. Like a Sky Hunter, maybe?
Sure, it's not too late. It was discontinued when we bought them. It's still discontinued.
And I'm the only one who finished their 3-view. Just reminding you guys.
There's a redemption. I get it.
So do we do a 3-view on a discontinued item that nobody can buy?
Yep, that's it.
Here's the thing. Look how cool it is, but too bad you can't get it.
Yeah. Well, Lee's probably going to give his away anyway, so they can get that one.
I'll give it to Austin. Just a quick little blurb here. Austin has worked, currently doing a lot of automated flight stuff now. And so he's got his own little, Arduino?
Yeah, Arduino.
Arduino computer with GPS and stuff. And he's using it with the Sky Hunter, the same mini Sky Hunter that we have.
They have one specifically for drones and flight. I forgot what they called it. I had a name for it. But anyways, that's cool. Yeah. Those are things, neat things to play with.
Mine is his backup right now. In case he needs it.
Ardu Pilot, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, okay. So speaking of buying caustic things, Fitz, I used your coupon code the other day to buy some stuff from Starbond.
Oh, right.
So I've been working on my review kit of the Slingsby Swallow. It's on the floor over here. And I'm just about running out of medium CA. So I got online and I bought some more CA.
Well, did you get a bottle for your Eindecker or two?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, touche.
You can't see okay. what my fingers are doing right now. But they're doing things.
I'm sure the Eindecker's giving you some fingers, too.
He knows his place, or she knows her place. So, one day I'll announce its glorious completion.
We'll see. So Terry, speaking of, we mentioned water-based polyurethane. You got a little bit of a snit on our Facebook page regarding your foray into using
the polyurethane. Yeah, so that's my handle tonight is oil and water. So I made a very innocent post yesterday because another project I've been working on is the BF-109 from 13th Squadron that my club here in Green Bay is doing as a winter build project. And I've actually got two of them that I'm working on. But on this first one, I'm at the point where I'm ready to start putting the paint job on. And so I watched the video on YouTube that Steve and Jack have for painting this model. And it's a foam board airplane using the Dollar Tree foam board, which is not waterproof. And their recommendation is to get oil-based polyurethane. And you brush a light coat of that on the exterior of the foam into the paper. And then once that dries, then the paper is essentially waterproof and ready to accept spray paint. And so that's been my plan here. Before I put any on the airplane, I took a scrap piece of foam board and brushed it with the oil-based stuff, and it seemed to work exactly as they said it would. Interestingly, on just a flat piece of foam board, if you put the stuff on one side, it shrinks up and curls a little bit. So that was a little bit concerning at first, but then talked to Steve a little bit about it and figured out that's what's going on. It's shrinking just like it would on tissue or anything else. So I made sure that when I did the tail feathers on my Messerschmitt, I did both sides at the same time so they would, you know, even each other out.
Makes sense.
But I didn't have any issues of the foam or the paper shrinking on the contoured surfaces. It, you just put it on. And what I did to make sure I got a small, very light layer is I was brushing it on, and then once I'd done an area, I'd take a paper towel and just wipe off the excess. And it seemed to work fine, and I've done a little bit of spray painting on it. It's hanging, drying now. You can't see it, but that very thin layer doesn't. It seems to be doing its job. The paint did not affect the paper.
Well, not according to the internet. You did it wrong, and you just ruined your plane.
Right. So going back to the post, yesterday I did the post of me putting it on there, and including a picture of the can, and several people seemed convinced that water-based polyurethane is the correct additive to put on here to make it waterproof. And so there was a little bit of a tiff between some people. Consequently, this afternoon, I took that same scrap piece of foam board, flipped it over, and I put water-based polyurethane on the other side.
Huh.
And it seems to work fine, too. It didn't soak into the paper and make it peel off, which, by the way, what happens often, if you just spray paint directly onto untreated, regular Dollar Tree foam board, the paper will kind of bubble up and delaminate from the foam. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
You can do it if you do super light coats. I've painted several of my foam board planes like that in the past, but those initial coats have to be just a super light dusting to seal things. And then once you've got a decent base coat, you can put things on a little heavier. But yeah, if you're heavy-handed with that first coat, forget it. It's going to be a wrinkly mess. So I can't really see it here, but here's one side of it. This is the water-based polyurethane side, and the paper is still sticking fine. And here's where I did the oil-based, and then I did test spray paint on there. So I don't know if that means either type of polyurethane will work here. This is, you know, very small sample size, of course. And also worth noting that foam board has variation in it, at least in terms of how tenacious the connection between the water and the foam is. Sometimes the paper peels right off easily, and other times it sticks a little better. Mm. So I don't know if there's variation in how it reacts to paint as well.
Interesting point.
Yeah, I did a quick search trying to find some testing that maybe other people have done in the past, because with flight test having all their designs, you would think somebody who's really taken a scientific approach to figuring these things out in the past.
Yeah, you would think. Yeah.
But, you know, I've seen some articles that talk about doing the oil base because water will destroy it. And then I've seen references of using the water base, but nothing that says, here's all of these different methods side by side and how they work. So maybe that's something that I'll do when I get some free time. But my experience as of the last few days is oil-based definitely works, and the water-based seems like it would work, but I haven't actually gone through the whole process of doing the water-based polyurethane and then paint over the top of that. So,
interesting.
Maybe I'll do my other BF-109 with the water-based.
Well, the proof is Steve's work.
Right. Yeah, I was confident using the oil base because if you watch their video, that's what he does. He shows how to do it, and his results, you know, can't be denied.
Correct.
And to be clear, mine is going to look nothing like his. I'm not doing panel lines and the airbrushing and all that stuff.
Yeah, his looks way too nice.
It is.
And judging from your test print, it's going to be a purple one.
It might be.
Purple 109. Question, can you airbrush that polyurethane?
I assume if you thinned it enough,
can you thin it? Do you know what you thin it with?
Well, the water base, you would thin with water. Water. Right?
But your oil base one, was it lacquer thinner, you think? Or any idea?
Here's the can. Well, it doesn't smell like there's solvents in it at this point. So.
I mean, I imagine it's too thick to airbrush right out of the can, right?
Yeah, it's pretty thick stuff.
Yeah. That was my first thought. Can I throw that in the airbrush? Because you reminded me, I have their Raiden from the Niskotas that I haven't put together yet.
Mm-hmm. Same construction engine. Bomber too?
I have the plans for it, but I don't have the actual bomber.
Okay.
So I'd have to cut that out. But this one, when I was visiting, they laser cut for me. So it's ready to go. I just haven't had a chance to. I need to watch the video to see how I put it together. Because I built one in a flight test one. I know it's kind of similar, but I want to see what their technique is like. They may have some nuances for their stuff. So I just need to get to it. So I'm curious, that's why, if I want to paint it, if I can, just because for giggles, if I can spray it instead of brushing it on.
Well, my theory in my head with no foundation whatsoever is that it's the whatever you would thin either polyurethane with is the source of the problem with putting polyurethane on foam board. So if you add water, which you got there, Fitz?
I don't know. My phone just started talking.
Huh. It's become sentient.
It's weird. Sorry. No, it just started playing a video for some reason. It's Ghost in the Machine. Anyway,
I think, yeah, if you add water to make water-based polyurethane airbrushable, it's probably going to compound any issues you would have putting it on there. You're just spattering a bunch of water on the foam board.
Well, I mean, you could turn it down or hold it far enough away that it's misted on instead of a slap slathering it on.
Maybe try it and let me know.
Yeah, I'm gonna try it, man. I'm the airbrush king or master or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, so same thing. Whatever solvent you would need to thin the oil-based polyurethane may affect the foam.
It could be. Yeah, I might try it on a scrap piece just for giggles. You never know.
Yeah,
it might work. Maybe a total failure. I don't.
Yeah,
I'll take that challenge and acceptance of possibly ruining a very fine scrap piece of foam.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you in terms of coating it with either the water-based or the oil-based polyurethane, you just get like a 1.5-inch cheap brush. Mm. It goes on so quick. You're not worrying about masking anything or any of that. You can just kind of swap it on and spread it. So it's a quick process to do this part. So I don't know how much time you'd be saving by airbrushing, but for scientific purposes, I understand your
science,
your endeavor.
That's the engine nerd in me. I got to know.
Yeah. All right. Wow, you got any thoughts on this, Lee?
I already told you. Good luck with that. I'm a water-based polyurethane guy, so I've not tried the oils, but, you know, me and painting, it's my Achilles heel, so I'd rather keep everything just simple.
The topic?
Yeah, pre-painted.
Well, I can probably make you feel a little better. When I was adding some color to my BF-109 this afternoon, I did not do a good job. And you ever have it where it's that kind of chalky finish that's on there? And basically what it is the paint dries before it hits the item. Quickly. If you're holding too far away or whatever condition it is. So I ended up having to sand some of it off and wipe it down and
You picked a paint scheme then for it?
I picked two, and I'm not going to tell you what they are yet, but there are some nice colorful paint schemes out there for BF-109s, which this is the E model. The ones I picked may not be historically accurate to an E, but, you know, I'm not going to be a stickler.
You're half reading my mind, because, yeah, that's the E model. So
you're going to airbrush some flames on it?
The flames on the Warbird are not good. But I go to see this. Here's one of the spinners. A buddy of mine printed this out.
Oh, cool. 3D printed?
It's got the cannon cut out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and here's another one.
So a lot of them had the squiggly, well, not squiggly, but the...
The corkscrew kind of...
Corkscrew, thank you, yeah. It's red.
Yeah.
Rain Rudolph.
There you go. Oh, that would be a good German name, too.
Yeah.
All right.
Heinz Rudolph.
All right, so there's that. We started talking about the controversy of my post from yesterday. So, I don't know. Can't we all just get along?
Yeah, well, it was just funny how such an innocuous post has got so many interesting and strong opinions.
Yeah, I mean, even if nothing else, it got a little more traction than I thought it would. Because of that.
We appreciate the interaction.
Yeah. I purposely didn't jump in the middle to try to squash things. And people were being friendly. There was no name calling or anything like that. Just, some debate over the color of the sky. All right.
I think both Lee and I have been doing some 3D printing. Lee, you want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
I'll start.
Okay,
I don't have anything to share for. I'll just more of a to talk, but I mean, unless you're new to the show, I have several 3D printed aircraft, and two are in boxes. Actually, I'm sorry, three are in boxes now, because now one box is empty, but I have the P-38 that my buddy Fitz gave me that I'm going to do Yippie someday.
Oh,
I have a 337, my third 337 that I printed, but this was like a year or two ago, and I still sit in a box. But I printed a 64mm twin A-10 with lightweight PLA, and I'm not sure how much I talked about it on our previous podcast, but I had printed it, had some struggle with printing the stuff, but then in the summer when we got the Bamboo Labs A1, I was printing other parts, and they were coming out really nice. The downside to that was I was having issues with the parts coming off the bed, because with lightweight PLA, and they were big parts, once it got to a certain height, it just started warping, and they were coming off, but once I started using this Bamboo Labs glue stick, they stay down. So it was just learning thing about lightweight PLA and big pieces. So I was gluing the A10 together. I was like, okay, I'm getting that done. And then I looked at the corner and I had this 50mm T-33 that I had tried. You know, some guy had it online. I was like, okay, I'll try it. It was a total disaster, not only printing it and assembling it, but I just knew things were wrong. So like I had changed the elevator is like just super tiny on this print. So I changed the pieces around, and I was corresponding with the designer, but my flight did not go well, and it broke, and I had just left in the corner. Well, I was at the workshop. It's like, you know, I'm working on the A10. I had some little time, had some time between epoxying, drying. So I was fixing some parts, and then I realized I was missing parts. I thought I left them there, but they were gone. So I went upstairs, reprinted the parts, came downstairs, glued a part on, went to connect it, and realized I'd put it on the wrong side. I was like, but I made a comment on our Facebook page. It's like, it's nice that the A1, the Bamboo Labs A1, you go to the menu and it lists, you know, all the parts that you had just recently printed. It was just great to go back and hit like, oops, I got to do that again. So I did finish that. So the T-33 is all glued up and ready for another test flight. So that's good. And the A-10's coming along, so hopefully I'll have that coming out. Hopefully, I mean, it'll be ready for Ceph. So that's crossing my fingers. I that's one I really would like to fly. I've never had an A-10. And
you've never had an A-10?
Yeah,
I have not. Now Austin has one, but I don't have one.
Okay.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And that's about it. I did some minor work on the other, that foamy 337 we were talking about. And Terry, just so you know, today, right before we started this, my new carbon fiber rod showed up. Well, darn it. I don't know what it is, but the stock, well, the ones that came with mine were like 4.94 diameter millimeter.
Yeah.
And I bought 5 millimeter rods. They do not fit.
They'll fit.
Oh, man.
So you're just not pushing hard enough.
Well, I tried rounding one of the ends. It's like, okay, maybe. No, it's just, I mean, it is too tight. So I'll have to finagle that in. But that's really all I think I told you I replaced the motor. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to having that done. So as soon as I can get those wing rods in, I'll have a test flight.
Yeah.
I'll bring it out with the Avanti.
So we can remind people, we don't know what the manufacturer of this 337 is, but it's one that used to be sold by Hobby Lobby that has some interesting design features. The outer wing panels snap into place. There's a little plastic tab that grabs, and there's a spar in the center section, and it looks like there's a separate spar in the outer panels, but they're not joined together. So it's kind of flippy floppy where the panels join.
Yeah.
And there's aileron servos in the outer wing panels, and the electrical connections are springs at the wing root. So
yours, not mine.
Right. By design. Yeah. So right. When you put the wing in, these little plungers meet the springs and make electric. It sounds very janky to me. Yeah, but
to be honest, I never had a problem with those that I can recall on my spring things.
So you relied on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think I ever recall ever having a problem with it.
It's weird to go from 22 gauge to big fat springs and then back to 22 gauge.
But I did put a spar in the middle section, a carbon rod, so when you snapped the wings together, it had some more stiffeners.
But it doesn't go to the outer panels?
No, it went through, maybe about 6 inches or so extended into the outer panels.
Okay.
So it kind of maintained, it stayed in the center just because for convenience, but as the outer panel slid in, they slid over the rod as well. That stiffened things up quite a bit. Yeah, the only thing is it took out the dihedral, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
But it's well, on mine, someone had already developed a method of connecting the wing rod to the center section at an angle. So there was two larger pieces of carbon fiber that were glued in epoxy like this. So when the rods go in, they just stop. Now they're not connected at the center, but they're so close together butted, they're not going to flex.
So it seemed pretty stiff?
Stiff
enough?
It did with the original rod. So I'm trying the rod I had is probably like 6 inches shorter than that would reach to the wingtip. So the guy, whoever did the center section, the original wing rod stopped earlier in the wing, so I really wanted to make sure it went all the way out.
Huh. Interesting. All right, well, I look forward to you finishing yours to give me some guidance on how to finish mine, if I decide to finish mine. We'll see. I think mine is the entry-level version with geared brush motors, and there's no landing gear on it. And here's a question. How do you put the battery in? I don't see a battery hatch.
The canopy.
My canopy's glued on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mine comes off with magnets.
Okay, I'll play that off.
Somebody didn't think that out.
No, I believe you because it looks like a separate piece of foam, but I went to pry it off and it wasn't going.
Interesting. Mine felt like it was built that way, so maybe I have a different version?
No, I don't think so. Maybe it's the case where this one's been in storage for a while, or like the paint, it's probably acrylic paint. Maybe just after a while, it kind of remarries. I'll get that hatch off one way or another. I ain't scared.
Just Velcro it on top.
Yeah. And you've got one too, right, Fitz?
No, not anymore. I traded it off some years ago.
Hmm. Actually, you know what, Terry? I want to say I may have found someone online who had this plane. Did you look underneath where the main landing gear is? Fitz, do you recall
it's a boy.
The battery hatch on the bottom?
I really don't remember.
No, mine doesn't have a hatch down there.
Okay.
That's a good question. I don't remember how I got the battery in there. I think I pulled the the canopy off on my, and it wasn't, I made it a hatch. I think it initially wasn't, and I made it a hatch or something like that. All right. Trying to unlock that memory. It's been so long. That's where my brain is going.
So did you have the brushed version or brushless?
It was the brushed version.
Okay. And so and you it was flew very it anemic. That way?
I flew it briefly. It was very anemic on brushed. All right. And so I ripped out the, it was funny, the rear motor was a direct drive outrunner, and the front one, I think, was because of the weight of geometry, I just bolted a motor, a Hutter Wind brushless motor into the gearbox on the front.
Okay.
I now figured out what the name is called. The, well, this is the thread on RC groups. The Hobby Lobby Cessna 337 Mixmaster brushless RTF. So that's what this has. And I will show a photo for Terry right now. Give me 1 second.
But what was fun with that was I had the speed controllers on separate channels so I could shut off the front one in flight and just fly on a rear motor.
Is that okay. A two-cell lipo in there?
Three.
Wow.
Yeah. There's 3 cell. But see, Terry, this is the to the left is the nose, and you can see how the, that's the hatch.
Yeah. Okay.
So try lifting up from the rear where that magnet is.
Uh-huh.
And then crack.
Okay, I'll look at it again, and I'll give you updates.
There's the spring contacts.
Yeah,
for the
it's crude, but it worked. I don't remember a problem with it. But I mean, if you want to change it, I'm not going to blame you.
I already did.
Yeah.
All right.
So is yours red or is it blue like this one?
Mine's red.
Okay, so there we go.
Yeah, mine was red too. Yeah, because if I remember correctly, they had two versions. They had the first one was the brushed, and then they came out with a brushless after. Probably after complaints.
Maybe.
Well, I'm looking forward to putting mine together.
I think it can get out of its own way. Because the original one came with nickel metal hydride batteries. If you remember correctly.
Oh, yeah,
this was brushed and nickel metal hydride batteries and stuff. So it was, it was probably a slug.
So I have a small 3S2200, one of the Z mini size ones that fits. I haven't done the CG yet, but there's a place where I can put it. And I think I might be repeating myself. I already replaced the rear motor because it was grinding so bad, but I've decided to go ahead and remove the trains out the front one too. As someone said, you know, could it be a bad bearing? I was like, this thing maybe just has one bearing in the bearing.
All right. Well, yeah, finish yours up. So I have some guidance on mine.
Roger.
Chop, chop.
I will. Okay. What else fits?
I've cranked up my 3D printer again.
Cleaned up? Was that what you said? You cleaned
cranked,
up your 3D?
Cranked
up. I see.
Yeah. My bamboo. It's funny because I hadn't used it in a while, and I went to feed it, and it would give me all kinds of error messages. I'm like, what the? It turns out I had some filament that broke off inside the AMS tubes that I had to go fish out. Various. Yeah, it's always fun to have to take apart the AMS, and then also near the head. Push that out. Anyways, so it was the reason why I brought it up was something very interesting. As you know, I've talked about before, you guys know Mike Leibel. He's building a B-17, and he's asked me that he won, at Bomber Field. Mm-hmm. And so we've been talking, and I've been printing out some 3D printing some stuff for him, some high detail parts. And so we've been working on the pilot figures. I printed out one and it was okay, but he's like, can you make it a little bit smaller? And we were talking about how he wanted the pilots, the figures we had was the fighter pilot, but he wanted a bomber pilot, which have different hats and stuff. They don't have the helmets. And we were at first thought about, well, let me take a head off of a German pilot, kind of look like that, put it on the body of an American pilot and stuff. And then he found some figures, B-17 bomber figures on a site, but they were for plastic models. But it was a really nice detailed set of pilots, co-pilot, and gunners, and bomber, and whatever. But they were pretty small. And it was like, well, can we scale them up? And will they look good when you scale them up? And so, we'll give it a shot. And so we got the files, and it turns out I printed out a couple, and they did pretty good. These were files originally meant for 1/32nd scale model, which is relatively large for a plastic model, but still pretty small.
That would be a big B-17 for your desk.
Yeah. So this is scaled up 320% from the original file, as it meant to. And it actually came up pretty good. I did a couple of different ones. This is, I think, the pilot and the tail gunner slash nose gunner. And they're neat because they have different poses. The co-pilot has a different pose, and you got the side gunners and stuff. And so these, I did these on a bamboo as a test print. I'll do resin eventually. But it was interesting. I was able to scale up a scale pilot so far. Kudos to the original designer that made the detail high enough that they actually look pretty good. I think good enough for what we're doing. So that's another option for those 3D printing stuff. If you want pilots, you might check out people who do pilots for plastic models, because you probably can get some good stuff as long as you're willing to scale it up. And they've made, it probably wouldn't be good as good if it's like a 1/72 scale. It probably would lose a lot of detail. But 1/32, I think, was just big enough that it had enough details that when blown up, it still retains a good number of those details.
Huh. Hey, Fitz, can you find me a pilot figure that looks like he's blacked out? I need that on my planes.
That's good, yeah. Passed out. So,
yeah, exactly.
Did you have to pay for those files, or was that on a free site?
He paid for them. They're off of the Gambody file. Gambody... No, Colts 3D, excuse me, it's a different place. Colts 3D had, somebody had, they didn't work much, but yeah, he had to pay for them. So he paid for these files, and he asked me to print them out for him. So.
Okay. And you printed them in black because that's what was already...
I just, whatever role I could just reach for. These were just, these are not meant to be used in the plane, just as test fit. Mm-hmm. So I printed these out, scaled up, and says, is this the right size? So sometimes, even though I scaled it up to the scale that the model is when it's supposed to be 1/10 scale, because of the nuances of the interior and seats and that kind of stuff. He may be a little bit too small, maybe a little bit too big. So I'm going to give these to him and says, hey, do these fit well, or do I need to tweak the scale a little bit to make them fit better in a cockpit and it's in a nose and that kind of stuff. And so this was just a quick print on the, this is not resin, this is just regular PLA filament. So, you know, it's 10 cents worth of filament as a test fit. And once we hone down the correct size, then I'll redo it in resin, which will be much higher quality, and we'll be done.
All right, nice. Now, a while back, you were talking about making 50 calibers and other detail parts for a bigger B-17.
Oh, no, same size. Yeah. Oh, okay. I have some remnants of them, yeah. Some. You probably can't really see it very well. Let me get the gray one. So, yeah, these are 50 cal... For the same machine, we were printing some out. These are some test runs, I think. I think this got a flaw in it or something. So we have 50 cal. They have separate, I'll bring it back up in a second, separate barrels. So here is the receiver end, and there's the barrel. And they're designed so that you'd be able to unscrew the barrel for transportation and stuff, so you don't knock them off. Fancy. So you can install them and take them off. Especially for some of the, like the side guns and the nose gun, or mainly for the as you're transporting around, you want to knock these things off so they can just make them two pieces. But these are really, really nice Browning machine guns. Now these are done in resin, so they're really, really high quality, high resolution. They got rivet detail on them, really smooth. They look like something out of a plastic model. They don't have the lines. If you look closely, you can kind of see the lines. I printed this at a lower resolution just to spit them out, but with FDM you have the lines because it's like squirting toothpaste out of a tube at layers versus UV cured resin. So
yeah, all right, so that's pretty cool.
So yes sir.
So what's the span on this completed B-17?
I think it's 120 inches, remember correctly,
that's
something like that.
Is that the same scale as his B-24?
His B-24 is 140 inches.
Okay, so
I don't know if the real ones were that big a difference.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought the B-24 had a longer span, but...
So maybe they're close. 10th versus 8th or 9th scale, maybe? That's a good question. I don't know the real sizes.
Knowing Mike, it'll be a pretty airplane.
Yeah, he basically took the ARF, ripped off all the covering, tweaked some of the woodwork fiberglassed it and is adding rivet detail, and is going to paint it and a bunch of other details and stuff like that. So he's basically super detailing it.
Yeah.
Made some tweaks to the structure. Mm-hmm. So he wants to compete with it in some of the local shows and stuff.
All right. And four strokes again or gas this time?
Four strokes. Okay. Sato, if I remember correctly, he's got four Sato four strokes in there.
Yeah, well, he's had a pretty good run with his B24 Sato. Going that route, so.
Yeah.
He's probably got a lot of confidence.
Yeah, I kind of like, for bombers, it's neat to go with the four strokes, the glow, because you have the sort of the smoke trails when you fly it. It looks really neat in the air.
Yeah.
You don't get that with gas or electric.
Yeah. All right. You think that'll be ready this summer?
Oh, yeah. He's making really good, quick progress.
Okay.
Plus, he's retired now, so he's got retired. All the time in the world.
Yeah.
And he's talking about that. He's like, yeah, I got all this extra time now I'm spending in the workshop doing stuff. He's happy as a bug in a rug being retired.
Good for him.
And he's traveling too. He was off all over the place. So he gets around and does his thing. So he's living a dream.
All right. Awesome. So did we talk about all the things?
I think we talked about all the stuff.
Huh. All right.
Yeah. I got a real quick funny story. There's a guy across town that does, Lee, Phil, does the sailboat stuff over near you. And Richard was here and wanted to see the sailboat run. I said, okay, yeah, I'll bring out a couple sailboats too. And I didn't realize how windy it was until we got there. And I don't know if you know, sailboats, they have like A sail, B sail, C sail kind of thing, depending on winds. It's basically the size of the sail. A sail is the biggest, B is a little smaller, C is, because if it's really windy, it's it's difficult to control the boat with a too large of a sail. And I thought of right on the edge, I was like, well, I might be able to get away with an A sail. That's all I have on my sailboat is A sail. And I said, well, I'll bring up my DF95 with the A sail, I'll give it a shot. And I had another sailboat, I don't know what it's called, it's roughly 1 meter size. I very rarely use it because the keel is so long, but where we're going is pretty deep. So I said, well, I'll bring this boat and I'll bring the DF95 and I can sail this and Richard can sail the other one and we can kind of have a good time. So I put my DF95 in the water and it's blowing probably 18 miles an hour or something like that. And I kind of did this really crude tack. I'm barely trying to control the thing. I do a downwind run, and a nose just goes like a submarine. I've never seen it go that deep before. I was like, oh, my God. It's all I could do to bring it back to shore, because it's just getting beat around by, I could barely tack the thing. It was just beat to hell. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to get this thing out of the water, because I just have almost no control of it. And so Richard puts my other boat in the water, and I wasn't quite paying attention. And I look over. And the boat is just laying on its side, just on its side. Like, did you let the sail out? It goes, yes, the sail's all the way out. And it's just on the side. Sometimes it would bob up a little bit, maybe about 45 degrees or something, and then lay right back down. We could not get that thing to stand back up. It eventually floated to the other side of the lake or pond, and we had to get in a car and drive all the way around to the other side and pull it out of the water because it just would not come back up. It was so windy that the thing just was a flatfish, whatever you want to call it, a flounder. So that's learned my lesson.
How big a deal is it to change sails?
I don't know. It seems to me like kind of a big deal. I asked one of the guys that very question. He goes, no, it's not a big deal at all.
Phil makes sails.
Yeah, I just thought it was a kind of a big deal. I was thinking about just getting another DF95 maybe with a B sail.
It's not too hard. I mean, you got to change the rigging, but it's not too hard.
And yeah, it seems like a pain in the butt.
Well, not entirely, because you keep everything on the mast.
Yeah.
You have to remove the tie downs, but usually once you replace the mast, it just slides the other one in. You just rehook the lines in. You got to check the stringers, make sure the mast is straight. Well, you know that. Yeah.
The other guy seemed to say that it was not a big deal to do it.
It's not.
So I will look into getting at least a B rig, as they call it, for my DF95.
Yeah, because remember the line for your main sail is just a clip. It's clipped onto the boom.
That's true. There is a clip. A clip for the another thing. So
yeah,
I just worry about after spending so much time tuning your sails, then you got to take it all apart and put another thing on. Kind of an arr, 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 arr. I'm just being grumpy about it.
You could have just cut a hole in your A-sail.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Have to cut a hole in parachutes. So, but anyways, some of these guys, speaking of 3D printing, one guy had a, they generally sell what they call IOMs, International 1 Meters. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy out there who 3D printed his hull, which was interesting. So that is an option too, 3D print your sailboat.
All right.
But on that note, that's it. We are done on the topics.
All right.
Good.
Lee will be happy. We're a little over an hour and a half.
Hey, look
some,
at the time.
Some listeners will be happy. So don't just put it on my shoulders.
Yeah. All right, you guys got any last words in before we blow this taco stand? No?
Do the usual, Fitz. Wrap us up.
All right, folks. Thank you again for listening or watching a wonderful episode of RC Roundtable. If you have any questions, comments, send us a note at contact@ rcroundtable.com. You can also check us out at our website, rcroundtable.com. You also listen to our episodes, and Terry has some cool articles and stuff he's posted in the past on there. We have our social media stuff, youtube.com and rcroundtable for these video if you're listening. Facebook also, rcroundtable. Do we have anything else? Am I missing? Like and subscribe. That's it. Show us some algorithm love by liking or subscribing or both or neither, whatever. You're just your choice.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you for your support. All right. On that note, we'll see you guys later next time.
Cheers.
Please visit our website at rcroundtable.com. That's where you will find all of our podcast episodes. You can also find a little bit of background information about the show host and leave comments and suggestions about the show. There are links to a few of our favorite vendors and also links to our various social media accounts. Thank you for watching and listening.